Welcome to another edition of the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Tonight's program is about healthcare, and it's about aging with grace. Our hosts will be George Baggett and Camilla Hewitt DeRosset. And we're going to talk about, with an aging population, the goal is an end to life with as much grace as possible. Camilla is a professional marketing director at Carondelet Home Care Services, and George Baggett recently completed this process with his parents. They'll discuss their experiences and recommendations in tonight's show. This program was recorded on Sunday, October the 2nd at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri, and we will have our usual format tonight. We will hear from Ms. DeRosset, and we'll also hear from Mr. Baggett. We'll take a short break, and then we will return directly to the questions from the audience. So let's go right to the introduction for tonight's show.
Good morning. My name is Craig Volland. I'm a member of the Forum Committee. This morning we have a really interesting program that we are all eventually going to be interested in even more, and that is aging with grace. We have two speakers that will handle this subject today. Camilla Hewitt DeRosset has been in the healthcare industry for over 25 years. She has hospice, home health, durable medical equipment, infusion, and private duty experience. She deals with patients on a daily basis, along with their family and friends. Currently, she is Director of Marketing for Carondelet Home Care Services. She has a degree in economics from UMKC. And we have someone who George Baggett, is a member of the church who recently went through an extended process of caring for his mother, Louise, who recently passed away and whom many of you knew. So take it away, George.
Well, Ann and Craig and I had talked about me doing a talk or a lecture or even a kind of an adult education meeting at the church for some time. And I was then they asked me to be part of the forum committee. And so I went to the first meeting at the Simpson House that I've ever have attended of the forum committee and met this beautiful woman here.
He's going to go places. Can you tell?
Oh. So,
yeah.
Anyway, if I'd known her while I was dealing with the problems that I was dealing with my mother, it would have been a great help. So much of what I was dealing with was from the seat of the pants. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm kind of a self-made person. I feel like I can solve problems. I'm a mathematician, and so somebody gives me a problem, I can solve it, you know, and that's how my job, my work is what I do. As Craig mentioned, my mother died in March, and after my father died 9-10 years ago, I became her surrogate person. They had arranged for durable powers of attorney for myself and a cascading arrangement with my brothers, and my role in my family has always been the big brother in solving problems. And so and my mother really wanted to live on her own and live in her house, and she had her tea parties, and she many women in the Demeters her friends would go to these parties and attend, and she was quite a social person. Anybody who knew her, she danced a lot. She was physically active. She loved her wine. She had a great time in life, and there have many stories. The point was that developed macular degeneration at one point, and it gradually got worse, and it became somewhat difficult for her to stay in her own home, although she was very stubborn about it and somewhat unrealistic about being moved out of her home. And so when the conditions warranted changes, she was adamantly opposed to moving into a care facility or even assisted living. She felt that was a waste of time. And coupled with that, she was becoming, her dementia, am I not speaking loud enough? Her dementia was causing her to be somewhat confused about her own abilities to function. And she started having falls. She had a cell phone that she would use anytime she felt like it. In the middle of the night, I was being constantly called out at 3 o'clock in the morning to her house. As many of you may know, she was attacked when she was 92, and it was a very serious attack. Let me put it that way. I'm being polite. And the one of the more prouder days, she did testify against the guy, and they caught him, and they put him in jail, and she testified against him. I was so proud of her for being so bold. But that incident, plus her blindness and some other issues, caused her starting to have anxiety attacks. And she'd actually had some of these anxiety attacks before. And so they started prescribing medications to her, anti-anxiety medications. And at first it seemed to work, but they weren't very, they didn't define really well what she was taking. And she didn't. She just thought if I have anxiety, I should take more. And at some point, she became very dependent on these things. Would call me at different hours of the day. I got 30 minutes. Can I take my pill yet? You know. And so what happened was that, as small a person as she was overdosing on this medication, and it was having the exact opposite effect. It was causing her more anxiety, and so. Of course, the doctors wanted to go have more medication to solve that problem. Anyway, in treating, and I think anxiety is a big issue with elderly, especially as they become unable to deal with their daily life, bathroom issues and the like. She had to go to the bathroom every 15 minutes, it seemed. It was like, and she would go sit on the toilet. Well, that activity resulted in falls because she wasn't blind and she would move into the, and so, and I want to make it real clear, short of moving to Oregon, you can't euthanize people in Kansas and Missouri, but I want to make this very clear that she, there was no way for her to, she didn't qualify as a to be euthanized. She was a very clear and well-oriented person, smart beyond what most people thought, and she was very stubborn. So that, anyway, as we got to the, finally got her into the facility, she thought if she just raised the ruckus, she could be moved back to her home, which didn't occur. And I became the enemy of my mother. I wanted to make a point before we get too far, and I'm going to let Camilla have the rest of the floor. The point is that today is that when you have a durable power of attorney, it's nice to have that durable power of attorney with an acquaintance or friend or a relative that's near your age or whatever. But you also need to have someone younger, like my mother had me, and that person needs to be the one who you would call to come to the emergency room to deal with an issue. And that person needs to have a PDF format of that durable power of attorney that's notarized, and that needs to be in their cell phone, so that when they go to the emergency room and they say, "Well, I need," they have two choices. You can get a new power of attorney done right then if the patient is cognizant. When my mother was had dementia, that was a little bit sketchy. So what we did was I had one on my phone where I could go to the hospital, and I didn't carry a durable power of attorney in my car or anything, and so I would go there and then just email it to the emergency room as a notarized durable power of attorney. And then, as you all know, and Camilla will talk about some of this, is that toward the end of her life, she broke her hip going to the bathroom. And twisted around and dislocated and broke the ball of her hip. It wasn't a serious fracture. It was a painful fracture at the time, but it meant that she wasn't going to be able to walk. And we took her to the hospital, and The doctors were more than ready to spend $50,000-$60,000 to replace that hip. I asked the question. I said, "Well, you know, she's frail. She's only weighs about 85 pounds. If you're going to screw and bolt something into a piece of balsa wood, or is that going to really be beneficial to my mother? And is it going? And oh, it'll be painful for months because it'll be, you know, the recovery." I said, "What if we don't do it?" And she's immobilized, and we wrap her up, and she actually, before she died, she somewhat healed the bone, you know, but it was bone, it was a little bit off, but the pain had gone away. And so you need this durable power of attorney person and yourself to be recognizing there are certain medical procedures you want to avoid doing at that point. And I was faced with the complexity of it costing our estate, but that really wasn't the issue for us. It was I wanted my mother to have a pain-free, dignified death, and she was very afraid of dying alone. So, but in the end, when she was in a care facility where we knew where she was and people were monitoring her. And they would call us up and say, "Oh, your mother really needs you, or your mother doesn't need you. She's just being a pill today," and she was a pill, you know. So I just joke with her and say, "Misbehaving" is my nickname for her. And so, and she was Louise. Anybody that knew her knew that my mom was a durable and assertive person who raised three assertive sons, and I loved her. You know, don't get me wrong. And so, as much as she, you know, would call me names, and I was the most terrible son that was available, that for having put her in these facilities, and at times it was rugged, but worth the cost. And I'm going to let my new friend here speak about, and I wish I'd known her. I really do.
Thank you very much. My presentation is going to be a little different because it's going to be hands-on, and it is to help educate everyone who's not in a healthcare field, but you all have participated in healthcare because you're the consumer of healthcare. So who in this room, I just want to raise of hands, who has not consumed any healthcare at all? Thank God. Now I can go on. Okay. So the very first thing that's really important before you consume healthcare is, and I see two people doing it, and you both get A's, taking notes. Okay, so I brought paper for anyone who wants to take notes, and I really encourage everyone to take notes. The very first thing in healthcare, when we consume it, we go to our physician's office. Let's just say it's not an emergency. We're going to start. You go to your physician's office. One of the very first things that your physician wants to know is all about your drugs. Okay? And so that's what you have. And this is a pretty in-depth drug list. So what I'm suggesting that all of you do is once you get home, fill this out and carry it with you at all times. And it's self-explanatory. What kind of drugs we're listing. So we're listing medications, and if you just follow the list, you can just see. Please fill this out and carry it at all times. The other part you might want to write in is any drugs that you have adverse reactions to, and what are those adverse reactions? And you want to really carry this list at all times, because imagine if you're in a car accident, you have your billfold with you, your purse, what have you. The ER physician needs to know, and it's very hard many times for them to guess, what are you on? So they can start procedures with drugs that could be very detrimental to you. So that's one of the things that's most important here, is carry this list at all times, and please update it as you see fit. If one comes off, one comes on, scratch it, so you're at all times current. Also, when it comes up to your physician, one of the very first things you also should do is the raise of hands. Who doesn't like their physician? One person doesn't like their physician. Okay, that's very unusual because most people absolutely love their physicians and they've gone to their physician forever. Okay, the thing that I suggest is all physicians are graded. You can just put their physician's name in Google. Patient satisfaction comes up, what patients say about them. So that's really good if you're ever looking for a new physician or even your current physician. What are other patients saying about that physician? And then it's a good way, if you're looking for new physicians, to also see. There's other websites that you can actually pay money to that they go in depth in regards to your physician. So just to let you know, because we want you to be, I really want you to be a very smart consumer of healthcare. We spend more time picking out TV sets, picking out cars, than we do picking out people who manage our healthcare. So that's really, really important to us, okay? When you go to your physician, many times, other than a complete physical, there's something wrong with you. Okay, you have an ailment of some sort. I call that your health is compromised. At a certain age, and that's everyone in this room, when our health is compromised, our thinking is not straight because we don't feel good. Something is going on with us and we're just not 100%. So when you're going to your physician's office, make sure you have somebody with you that, A, are asking the right questions and also writing the answers down. Because if you go by yourself, first of all, what do most physicians do? Any idea? They talk real fast. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Because many have only so many minutes to spend with you. You might not know that, but that's da-da-da. And off they go to the next person. And you're going, oh, my God, what did they say? Or what didn't they say? So it's important that we capture everything that they're telling you. That's why it's very important if you have someone, whether that's a close friend or not, that they're taking notes for you. Also, another part of this is, and there are 10 states in the United States, and this is the economics coming out in me, that the senior population is outnumbering the younger population. We are one of those states. So just be aware that a lot of doctor's offices are going to be hard to get into. I mean, waiting times and all that, because we're the majority in Missouri. Something else that I want to talk about is hospital mistakes, and they happen every single day. You might not know that they happen every single day. So when someone ends up in the hospital, the best advice, whether that's you or a loved one, that I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, have someone with that person in the hospital 24 hours a day. We could call it a sitter, where the person is just actually sitting and observing, but it is someone that's trained in observation. Okay? A good example, this happened 2 years ago. A very good friend of mine, very athletic, winds up in the hospital. And her husband is an engineer, and she's a master's level social worker. She's the patient. So I tell her husband, I said to him, observe everything, and she was on IVs, so watch everything and make sure everything is the same. And if something changes, ask questions. So one day, a nurse walks in, and a new IV is being hung. So she hangs this IV, and she leaves. And my friend, he looks, and he notices, he's not medical, he notices that the IV color is a different color than the one that she had before. So he calls the nurse, he calls the call button, and the nurse comes in, same nurse, and he goes, what is that medication? And she looks, very flippantly says, oh, so-and-so, let's call her Mrs. Smith that's laying in the bed. Oh, this is Mrs. Jones's medication. Sorry. Well, that, in medical terms, requires a major write-up because that's a medical error. Do I think she wrote it up as a medical error? Absolutely not. Because then after, if you have a medical error, then you have to make a work in progress, as I would call it, is how do we prevent those medical errors and this particular one from happening. So it's very important, and it's not happened just once with a friend of mine. Another one that just happened, believe it or not, 4 weeks ago. Good friend of mine's mother in the hospital. She had both of her breasts removed, so she had prosthetic breasts. Okay, so when she was in the hospital, her daughter took the breasts off and put them in the closet in her room. Housekeeping came, and they totally cleaned up everything. And they thought it was, because she had big breasts, they thought it was probably diapers, and they threw them away. So now mother's ready to be checked out, and she's looking for her breasts. I know it sounds, you know, at one point you want to think it's a comedy show, but it's not. And so my friend calls me. She goes, Camila, they lost my mother's breasts, and my father's going to be furious. And I said, okay, you need to write a letter to the administration right now and hand deliver it, because that's not acceptable. She came in with all of her body parts. She needs to leave with all of her body parts. And sure enough, and that got the administration's radar very quickly. They brought in someone who specializes. They measured her, and she walked out with her two breasts. Now, if she wouldn't have had that knowledge, another medical error. So just to let you know, and I do mean this, please, 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 from the bottom of my heart, have someone with you at all times, because you don't know what those medical errors look like.
That's almost exactly what happened to my mother. She had one breast implant, breast augmentation, and they lost it. We had to search through all sorts of ways to get it back, and it took a couple of days, and she was very frustrated. There has to be some middle ground, you know, but this is the ideal situation, and you may not be able to be there for every second, but you're going to have to be observant.
Yeah, there is a product line out there, and it's called Private Duty. And Private Duty, it is many times private pay, but if you have a long-term care insurance, and it's an old long-term care insurance, Private Duty is in a lot of the long-term care insurances, and that is where you can actually have a sitter. Depends upon what level of care the patient needs, that's sitting there and just observing and doing all those kinds of things. So if anyone has long-term care insurance, I suggest heavily you read your policy, because the old policies are absolutely excellent, and they cover a lot of things that when you got it, you didn't think you might need, but now you need. When we're shopping for health care, in the United States, many of us really don't shop, because you know what we do? We have insurance, and what do? We just give them the insurance card, and we expect it to be, you know, we have a copay, a deductible, and we're done. Isn't that kind of how we work? Yeah, exactly. Because what happens? So facility A, let's call hospital A, they have a certain cost report. They have certain costs that it costs them to do a joint. Let's say you have you need a knee replacement. Okay, so those are their costs over here. Hospital B, this is their cost for that knee, totally different. Okay, so now, for example, if you have Medicare, the traditional Medicare, and that provider is a Medicare provider, they have agreed with Medicare, this is what that joint is going to cost, and your deductible, and you're good to go. Okay, if you have other insurances, it depends upon your insurance policy and how much they're going to cover. The problem is with us. When we shop for a car, we know the price of the car. When we shop for insurance, when we shop for a hip, a knee, we should know the price. We can know the price, only it takes us some work, and that is you call the provider, you give them your insurance card, you go, okay, how much out of pocket is this going to cost me to do this? Because you go to provider A, it could be this much, provider B, it could be this much, and provider C goes, well, I'll just take this whole benefit and it's not going to cost you anything out of pocket. So please be aware that costs are totally different. A very good friend of mine, he is in the grain business. And so for the first time ever, this is 2 years ago, he had to have a procedure done. He called me, he goes, Camila, can you tell me what, how to go about it? And then he called his hospital and said, can you tell me how much it costs for this procedure? They couldn't tell him. And he thought that was the strangest thing ever, that you cannot quote a price. I said, well, you need to give them your insurance, and then they can tell you how much it is. Most people don't do it at the front end, and then they get a bill at the back end, and that's no good. So,
Along these lines, I have two real quick stories about that, is that my wife and her mother had the same stress tests at the same clinic at St. Luke's. And my mother-in-law was on Medicare, and my wife was on Blue Cross Blue Shield with a high deductible. And so we got the bill. Our bill was $3,700 for this stress test. My mother-in-law's bill for the exact same test done at the exact place was $430. And so not only my son has an MRI once a year, and we learned our lesson. We have to check around. He found going in, like Camilla's saying, it was going to be $3,000 or so. We found it for $700 by shopping. So please, she's totally correct about that.
Oh, thank God. Okay. Thank you, George. I'm glad I brought him along.
Whatever you say, dear.
Next is... Does everyone know the role of the pharmacist? Of course you all do. But the real key is, what I suggest all of you have, how many of you do mail order? Okay, great, because that's very economical. Okay, so with mail order, what I want to suggest, find a neighborhood pharmacist and make him your best friend. Okay, and all of you who have a pharmacist, make them your best friend, because as we consume health care, we have a primary care physician over here, we have a cardiologist over here, we have a pulmonologist over here, and it goes on and on and on. Unless you are in the same health system, whether that's St. Joseph Medical Center, St. Luke's, HCA, doesn't matter. The medical centers, if you're staying within a medical center, they'll talk to each other because of computers. But if you're a smart consumer, you're going to different places because not everyone is an expert in everything. So consumer, you could have your best cardiologist over here, your best orthopedic guy over here, and on and on and on. And they could be in different health systems, and those health systems do not talk. Okay, now that's why we have Cerner and Epic. They're trying to get us all talking to each other because that's really most important. It is that whole medical record goes, and then everyone can see everything. Many times, each health provider only has a small portion of your medical record, and that's not good. And that's why I say definitely carry the medication cards, because that's the very first thing. What's the drug interactions? Home safety evals. What's really important when we live in our... How many have lived in their homes for a long period of time? Let's say 10 years or more. Okay. How many less than 10 years? Okay. So the very first thing that I want to say is even less than 10 years, we're used to our home and how it is. The number one place for all of us as seniors to have injuries. Can anyone tell me what you think is the number one injury in our homes. Anybody? False. Everybody, you deserve a clap. I congratulate all of you. False. Now comes the tough question. Where do the falls occur? The number one fall? The traditional toilet. Traditional toilet is like this. Okay? This is traditional toilet. It's too low for us. So the minute you try to get up, you're going to fall. That is the number one place. It's too low. So you need to be 17 inches or higher. Okay, so if your house has the traditional toilets, the very best investment you can do ever is replace them. And the toilets, you can go to Home Depot, $149, $159, tall toilets. Please, if at all, make that happen, because that's where it really happens.
Along those lines, there's two things that she's not noticing here, is that you're adjusting your clothing so you can accomplish this task, and then you're also twisting. Is that you need a grab bar near your toilet to be able to get up and down. And the falls, for my mother especially, was when she was in a wheelchair transferring from a wheelchair to the toilet, or twisting around, and then also trying to adjust her clothing in the process. And so, in fact, I tried to talk her into wearing Depends at some point, because basically she would have to go and maybe have to urinate maybe a few cc's, you know, just to make herself comfortable. And it's not something you want to tell everybody that you know, but if you, at some point, you need to be able to learn for your own safety, to be able to use these Depends as a tool to defend yourself against falling. Because if you could change your Depends or these diapers or whatever they call them, and there are some of them are very almost non, you can't even tell that you're wearing them. If at some point, if you can do that, you will save yourself a tremendous amount of grief. Getting out of bed, going to the bathroom, twisting around.
Oh, thank you, George. That's so sweet of you. Okay. I'm almost going to close. Understand this. You have to find the resources. And many resources are out there that are absolutely free to help you. One of the things that you can also do is one of the best places to find resources is actually at your hospitals. The social workers in the hospitals have a tremendous amount of resources. Like, for example, who can come to my house to do a home safety eval? If you are on home health, if all of a sudden you have a medical condition and it requires skilled medical care, and that's what I'm in. We have nurses, PTs, OTs, social workers, bath aides. The occupational therapist will do a huge home safety eval, and that's part of the care that says you need grab bars, you need this, you need that. Now, mind you, those are suggestions. That doesn't mean you have to take them. But by all means, I recommend you do take them. And they always say this is the best place or the least expensive place to find this, to find that, and to find that. So I think we're going to stop because I have a lot more things, but I know we can cover that in the library. So questions?
You're listening to Camilla Hewitt-DeRosset and George Baggett talking about end-of-life healthcare and healthcare in general here on the All Souls Forum tonight. Let's take a short break. We'll return with questions from the audience.
Well, I want to commend both of you for the work that you've done, but I particularly want to address the issue that George was up against, which was the stubbornness or the resistiveness, if that's a word, of our parents sometimes. So assuming that we have the information that's appropriate for what their level of care is, What kinds of things do you recommend, if there is such a thing to be had, to assert, to be assertive, and so that these people can obtain the level of care that's really appropriate for them? How can we be assertive without getting into really bad fights with our mothers or fathers?
I think that's an excellent question. I face that a lot, and that we she did not want to move to the care center, and she did not want to move. She was having an episode, a couple of episodes at her house where we had to have people with her at night, and they were not able to care for her because she was having some irrational episodes, mainly due to the drugs. In my case, I just became adamant that we've reached a point, Mother, that we're going to make this decision. This is you have no more further input in how we're going to accomplish this and moving forward. And that was not received well, but it became so obvious that we had to do this. And she, I don't think she ever agreed to this. And in fact, even toward the end, she was ready to move back home. If I would have given her the choice of the last few days of her life, she would have moved home. And she tried. She tried to escape. She tried a number of times. She tried to leave the building. And so you just have to be adamant. You have to. It's really different than the idea of you're storing your parents somewhere, you know. Because I was out there most of the week, every other day at these care centers. And so it's a matter of you have to convince that person that the decision is irrevocable. And that's you have to maintain it. When I took her phone away from her, it was the same, Mother, you're calling people in the middle of the night. You're calling, she called the emergency of 911 one time in the middle of the night from her care center, saying they're keeping me against my will. And you know, there's a, please call my son. I'm having a heart attack. And then they call me and get me on the phone and say, well, they were still on. The 411, 911 was still on. They said, oh, well, I just said that because I wanted them to call you. And they, we don't need to be on this call anymore. So you just have to be adamant. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. Do you have a comment?
Do you think I have a comment? I do. It's a really tough discussion. But the other thing that you've got to realize, and it's really from the get-go, if you are in a care center, they used to be called nursing homes. They are now called rehab facilities. Because sometimes, many times now, patients from the hospital go to rehab, to be rehabbed, and then they go home. So the nursing homes have reinvented themselves, which is really good. Some of them are long-term care, where the patient is there for the rest of their life, but most of them now have that segment, but they also have rehab. So to answer your question, a different take is to get someone involved very quickly that's not emotionally involved in the case. Many times that's a social worker, and get them on board whereby they become your advocate. And they become your parents' advocate, your own advocate, but they're the carrier of the messages. And they have very wonderful skill sets that they can deal with this because they deal with this on a daily basis.
I just wonder if you can give us some advice about how effective the I Live Alone devices are, if you know anything about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I need to put this forward. We are the largest Carondelet Home Health, and I'm not trying to preach us, but we are the largest suppliers of Lifeline. It's just one, and Lifeline is the number one in the country, but there's many others. Okay, the good part is the newest ones are fabulous, because back in the day, and it was not very long ago, you could only stay in a certain parameter. Okay, now they've extended a parameter, and you would have to push the button. Now, mind you, so if I were to fall forward, and they're either necklaces or watches, but if I fall forward and I have a necklace, and I'm laying on the necklace, or it's on the side, and I can't push it, what good is it? So the new ones, which is fabulous, either the necklace or the watch, it's sudden movement of air. So sudden movement of air sets it off, meaning it can tell you're falling. The other thing is it used to be that you had to have landlines. Who in this room still has landlines? Okay, some of you. Okay. Get rid of those landlines. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a different discussion. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm getting out of... No. You do not now need a landline at all. So that's a huge benefit, too. Yeah, I'm a huge believer in whichever brand it is, because for two things. One, for your own safety, but also for your loved ones. They know they can actually leave town. If something happens, you'll be notified if you're on the list to be called. The biggest thing, though, with these devices, whether it's landline, no landline, when the number one question is going to be, is who do we call when it's set off? Okay, that doesn't mean it becomes 911. So who do we call? So you'll say, well, I want my son called. Well, my son is in Oregon, we're here. That's unrealistic. Because the real question is, who's going to let 911 into the house? So you need someone that has the ability, because you don't want them tearing down your doors and on, is to let them into your house when that happens.
And just one other question. Sure. Do we get these from Carondelet?
Oh, you can. Oh, you can even get online, too. Okay. You know, so I'm not trying to push mine at all.
Right.
But like I said, there's a lot of different ones, and you just have to investigate what the pros and cons are and how much it costs.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Go shopping.
I have one real quick comment on that. Is that for certain patients, like my mother, when she had dementia, this device would not have been suitable because it made it too easy for her to be calling, and she would have used it every day.
I just ran into something new for me. I take a particular prescription, and I just traditionally go to, it used to be Walmart, get my prescription, pay the copay. I recently found out when I changed providers this year, I happened to go into Walmart and say, how much is this? And their first question was, do you have insurance? And I thought, well, I'm going to say no. And they quoted me a price. It was like $75. And I said, oh, I forgot. Suddenly it became $118. So I decided, okay, maybe this is a fluke. So I had been told Costco is one of the best places as far as pricing. I went to Costco. It was $48. I called the mail order for the provider. It was $117. I don't know what's going on here, but why is insurance, and how does the average person find out what the best price is? And at times, I guess it's best not to tell them you got insurance.
Yeah, no, you bring up a good point, and that was the earlier point. Really, whether it's a broken hip or whether it's drugs, you have to do your due diligence as in shopping around, and you will find it's different prices for the same thing. And it's just, that is how the industry is, which brings me to one little point, just to let you know, and this was on my talking points. I just attended a seminar not very long ago, less than two months ago. A group of physicians, three young physicians, they just graduated. They live here in Kansas City. They just graduated from Harvard, and they are going to start their own practice. And it's what they were discussing. They went in and looked at, and they were discussing this when they were at Harvard, is how they felt the healthcare system was, in a sense, screwed up, okay? And that has to do with costs. And they got together, and they said, when we graduate, we're going to do it this way. And they just opened up in Johnson County their office. Their office is credit cards or cash. And this is, you walk in, this is what it costs for this. This is what it costs for this. This is what it costs for this. Just like you go shopping for a TV set, those are the costs. Credit card or cash, we're not doing any insurances. This is what it is. And many times what they have found, just like a simple office visit, they're charging less than you're going to be paying once even your insurance kicks in. And they said, and they really feel strongly that this is going to be a new healthcare model in the United States. Just an FYI. And just
what place is that?
Oh, you know what? I've got it back in my office. I don't have it.
You know, and let me really quickly respond. During the discussion afterwards, I'm gonna have some comments about insurance that are complicated and too time consuming. Let's take your question.
Well, say we have an orthopedist that we go to for various things. If your orthopedist says, well, you could use a knee replacement, he probably has a hospital. How do you shop for procedures when it's...
Right. And that is, well, I've got to tell you, depending upon the orthopedist, if they're part of a large health system, they're going to suggest their own health system. Okay. And that is one of the things that... that you will be doing, then you'll be staying in that health system unless you want them to do their surgery there, that you might say, are you licensed to do surgery over here? But you bring up a very good point. So that's the other part of it, is you have to shop around, but some physicians, they don't not leave their health system. You know, so that's what you have. Or you go, well, if the best one is over there, but that's not my orthopedist, and you have another consumer decision to make. It's tough.
What I want to know is, have you heard of the Disability Integration Act?
I have not.
What it is that anybody that has, if it passes, it will give people the right to have health care in their own home. And this is what it is. Chuck Schumer has introduced it in 15. They're getting sponsors now. But it has a bill whereby you have a choice of staying in the home or going to a nursing home or facility like that. So it's something that people should know about and maybe try to help get it passed.
Staying at home is the absolute best place for everyone. And back in the day, there weren't any nursing homes. But back in the day, it was also much less complicated. And there was extended families, and everyone lived close by, and everyone helped everyone. But nowadays, we're much more spread out, so it makes it difficult. But the best place for anyone with health care issues is in their own home.
Back on the wearable health care alert systems, is there anything like a consumer's report that would compare the various features? Or if you go to Google something, what do you Google generically that would pull up the panoply of options?
The generic one, which is the biggest one in the industry, it's called Lifeline. Okay, but you can just Google, and you'll see that there are many different ones, okay, and many different costs. But do they operate the same way? Yes, they operate. They all have the same features. So it's a matter of cost, how much it is per month.
Thanks.
Because the biggest thing with any of them is who is going to open the house to get 911 in, or who's going to respond to the alert.
Following up on several people's questions relating to medications and your advocacy for shopping around, Walmart does have a fairly lengthy list of medications that they provide for $10 for a 90-day supply. And I think that just by contacting them, you can find out what those medications are. On the other hand, there are some pharmacies that will not tell you how much your medication is going to be under your insurance plan unless the doctor has actually sent the prescription or faxed or whatever, however they do it, mechanically to them, which sort of serves as a barrier to getting that kind of information.
Oh, something on that, on medications. When you have open enrollments, the one thing that the best advice I can give you on medications is look at the different plans and see which ones have the majority of your medications. But that's step one. Then step two, what you want to do before open enrollment, go see your PCP and have a discussion with them about your health care. And this is your health care in the future. Okay, now they can't guess that you're going to break your hip. They can't guess all of these things. But it's about the medications, because the medications can be very, very expensive, and you want to make sure you grab the plan, sign up for the plan that has the majority of your medications. But your physician can help you a lot in saying, you know, I think down the road you might be on this medication, on this medication. So you can kind of bet on the CAM that if indeed this coming year I might be on this one, grab that plan just to think outside the box for your information.
My question is just following up where your comment of saying the best place to be is in the home. And then I was very shocked to hear, George, that of your mother's attack, which I wasn't aware of because I'm kind of new to the community. So I think, you know, I just wonder about mental health-wise and security and for the community when it comes to that, is the best place in the home if the neighbors are disturbed and calling police, and if there's security risk and there's the person, what about they're alone all the time and they're lonely? I mean, I'm just, you know, you're talking about your mother that had the anxiety and the medications, and said she took them more and more. But what about, you know, like behavioral health and mental health also? And someone said, you know, it's good if you can have the medical care come to you and you have a disability, but being isolated all the time and maybe and not being in one's, you know, proper mental state, I'm just kind of not sure that it's always best, because somebody might feel really regretful if something happened.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and part of it. Let me make the point that my mother lives at 103rd and Overbrook, which is right off State Line in Leawood, and probably one of the safest neighborhoods in Kansas City. It was a random act. It was everybody involved, the police force, everyone was concerned. We just couldn't hardly believe that it occurred there. I don't think with terrorism, with crime, we cannot take the position that you're going to be attacked at your home. I think you got to take the position you're going to be as safe as possible at your home from that point of view. This was such a random act, and so I agree. I think that she was okay there until she lost her abilities to function and lost a little bit of, had dementia issues and anxiety issues that made it even worse. So that was essentially the trigger that caused us to move to a care center.
We've got time for one more question.
For years, I took care of people, and I took care of them in their homes or in nursing homes or wherever. And there were many times that I caught things that they never caught, and got them taken care of before, you know, got them, call the families. That's what I did. I called the families, and then the families got involved. I also got mugged late in my life, and that's when I decided to move from where I lived. And can't remember the other one. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Before we quit, I think we're going to, I have a lot of these, we have a lot of these medication cards, and for those of you who came in late, you should have one of these in your wallet with the medication. Camilla has essentially created this for her work, and where there's plenty of them. So please be sure and get one of these and have it filled out and carry it with you.